following is a conversation in a series of podcasts discussing topics and issues dealing with high technology crime and digital evidence recovery. These podcasts are presented by Search, the National Consortium for Justice Information and Statistics. This series is made possible through funding from the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance. Hi, I'm Elizabeth Tao, a high-tech crime training specialist at Search. With me today is Nicole Bokra. Hi, Nicole. Can you tell us about your background?
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for having me. I am actually a certified fraud examiner. I've been conducting investigations since 1997. Currently, I'm an adjunct professor of forensic accounting at Champlain College in Vermont. People always ask if I actually go there every week, and I say, no, it's online, so we can actually accomplish a lot via the web. In 2005, I actually started my own investigative firm. We develop complex cases, provide expert investigative services, and in-depth due diligence. Over the past few years, I've taught numerous sessions on investigations and intelligence gathering, you know, all online. We go over the procedures along with the scope and capabilities of online systems. And I've taught to both the public and the private sector.
Great. Today, we're going to talk about searching information and also searching for people. Being able to find relevant online information in a timely manner during an investigation is critical. How do you make sure your search results are relevant?
We conduct our research using an individual's personal identifiable information, or also called PII. Personal identifiable information can be used to uniquely identify, contact, or locate a single person. Specifically, if you're looking for someone's full name, their date of birth, their address history, information coming from credit headers or their social security number. In order for the information to be relevant, we also suggest that you use two pieces of the PII.
Okay. And what are the primary topics that you initially search for?
We search for alternate spelling of names. I think that's one of the biggest tips that I can give listeners today. Realistically speaking, my name is Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, but some people spell it N-I-C-H-O-L-E. So in conducting internet research, you have to remember that it's garbage in, garbage out. So you need to keep in mind any alternate spellings of names. We also identify any phone numbers, address information. We look for spouses. We also look for photographs. We look for images of people dancing on tables after they had a major surgery and are suing their back doctor because they can't walk anymore.
What are your favorite resources to search for information, both free and pay resources?
Investigators should keep in mind that there are search engines like Yahoo, Bing, and Google, which search documents for specified keywords. Basically, the search engine sends out spiders, I like to say, in the middle of the night, and it retrieves all of the information for related documents as possible. The one thing that everyone needs to keep in mind is not every search engine contains the same information. So when you're conducting an investigation, you need to make sure that you're using multiple sources. So in addition to the search engines like Yahoo, Bing, and Google, there are also meta search engines. For example, iXQuick, the BrowSci, and Zula that allow you to run comprehensive searches across a number of different search engines. And basically what that does, it compares your results simultaneously. So you're able to determine if you have 100 results that are the same for each one of the big search engines, it will only give you the unique results, the results that are not contained on other search engines. A search aggregator website is what the meta search engine is, basically collects all the data from online and offline sources, a lot of phone directories, a lot of online photo albums, public records. You know, the one thing I tell people is, if you're stupid enough to put it online, then I'm going to use it against you. So you have to be careful what you put online.
That's a great point. And often we see that that's exactly what get people in trouble is the stuff that they unwittingly stick out there and expect it to only stay among friends.
Exactly. There are a lot of times when you think you're securing stuff for only your friends can see it, but especially on something like Facebook where your friends have their sites open to view their friend information, your posts and your photos may be seen by others that you don't want them to see.
Absolutely.
I do have a few more free resources. I always like 123 People Search. 123 People Search is a free people search engine that allows you to find and track your information online. They have current addresses, current phone numbers. One of the other free people search websites that I like is Zaba Search. Zaba Search actually pulls up information from white pages dating back to the early 70s and 80s. For our free searches, I like Exactolead. Exactolead has a search where you can choose whether you want everything displayed in a text format or a thumbnail format or a short description. Sometimes when you're searching, you just want to scan through all of the resources. So a quick search sometimes is better. And the one thing I always like to mention, I think it's important when conducting an investigation to look at political contributions. So NewsMeet will allow you to conduct a donor search to determine if the individual made any contributions. I don't care if someone's a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or a fan of Mickey Mouse. All I care about is, did they donate money to a particular individual? And because of that, were they awarded a government contract? That's the connection I'm always looking for.
There's some pay sites that are also available, Nicole. Can you tell us about some of those that you prefer?
The pay sites are kind of interesting. The one thing I like about pay sites such as LexisNexis, Tracers, and TLO are that they actually allow you to aggregate the information based on some personal identifiable information. In each jurisdiction that you live in, and I'll just give you an example of here in Virginia, you have clerks of the courts, and each clerk has its own website, basically off of a common website. So I cannot search court records here in Virginia by conducting one search. I have to go into the individual counties to conduct the searches. So a lot of times what happens is these counties and states and commonwealths, if you would, they actually sell their material and their data to data aggregators. And these people like Lexis, Tracers, TLO purchase this information with the objective of they're going to be able to track an individual. They will be able to piece together all of the different bits of material on an individual and put it into one database. Now, our goal here is to check the database providers to see what jurisdictions they actually cover. Because if you're conducting an investigation in Arizona and LexisNexis, for example, only picks up two cities in Arizona, that is not going to be a complete search. So you have to take into consideration the source of the material that's in the database itself.
Now that we have a good idea of what resources are available, do you have any tips or tricks to ensure that we're searching correctly?
I have a number of different tips and tricks, and some of them I'd like to mention now include varying your search parameters, using quotation marks, for example, around a subject's name. Using quotation marks around the name Nicole Bokra will allow you to get a more narrow number of hits. And basically what you're doing is you're telling the website or you're telling the search engine that you only want material where the word Nicole Bokra are connected and they're next to each other. My sister's a golf pro. My brother went to law school. If you run the word Bokra, you'll sometimes get up my brother's information or my sister's information or my cousin's information. By putting quotes around the word, you're telling the search engines to consider the exact words in that exact order. And that's always helpful. Another tip that I'd like to give you is to always write down obscure pieces of information. I always recommend when conducting internet research that you have a pad of paper next to you and you write down names of possible relatives. You write down addresses that you didn't previously know of. You write down pets' names if you see a pet, for example, in a photograph. Write down information pertaining to siblings or children or in-laws or outlaws. I mean, all of those people might be relevant in your investigation down the road, so it is important to make a note of them.
What is the best way to validate the information that we are finding?
When conducting internet research, it is always important to know the source, where the information was originated. For example, did the information come from the Social Security Death Master files? Is it off of credit headers or civil or criminal court records? I never rely on the website itself for a source. I always look for the underlying document. So for example, if you were to run Nicole Bokra in Google and you're going to look for information about her regarding GPS tracking in Virginia, you may do a search and come up with a number of different hits on the Google site. What's important is not the information on the Google site, it's the underlying source material. It's the Washington Post article. It's the Virginia newspaper that she was mentioned in several times. That is your actual source document. Your source is in Google. The best tip that we can give you is verifying the source of the information.
Since 2001, there are many federal watch lists available. Do you include this in any of your search investigations?
Absolutely. I think our world changed on September 11th, 2001, and there was even a Washington Post article from 2004 that said that the federal government's no-fly list had 16 individuals on it on September 11th, 2001. Now there's over 20,000 people on that no-fly list. In addition to the no-fly list, you have the postal inspectors most wanted. You have the World Bank list of ineligible or disbarred firms and individuals. You also have the DEA fugitive list and the FBI most wanted. And when you're conducting investigations that involve money, you also have the Treasury OFAC, the Office of Foreign Asset Control's SDN list, the specially designated nationals. And I think the importance of checking that is, maybe you're right, maybe not everyone's name will be on that list, but during some investigations, you may find someone's name on that list. It's good to cross-reference your subjects and your witnesses against the multiple lists that we have here, just to be on the safe side.
Keeping up with technology is crucial in this industry. Can you share with us any websites that provide up-to-date information on new resources?
I get asked this question all the time. Everyone asks, Nicole, how do you find new websites and how do you keep up with the changing times? I like the website Search Engine Watch, basically a search engine watch website that provides tips and information about searching the web, analysis of the search engine industry. Second one that I really like is Mashable.com. Mashable is a great resource for the latest in technology and digital and social media. They always have great websites on there. And some of them are here today and gone tomorrow, but others really impact the work that we do.
There are many resources available to conduct information and people searches. What are the main differences in quality between the free and pay resources?
In my opinion, fee-based data providers collect and maintain a database of both public and non-public background information. They may have information on felonies. They may have information on misdemeanor offenses. Bankruptcies, judgments, and liens are something that may be included in a pay resource. Most of the time with the free websites or the free resources, really what you find is material that was in libraries, material that was pulled from written material, from news and media articles. Most of the free sites really have the information relating to social media. For the most part, you have the Facebook, the MySpace, the LinkedIn. These are all websites that are self-reporting information by an individual.
What are the advantages that you see to using each of the free and pay resources?
I think the advantage to the fee-based resource, it uses advanced search logic to access the information, matching the personal identifiers. So for example, if you received a speeding ticket at an address in Arlington, Virginia, and then someone with the same name and date of birth received a speeding ticket in Austin, Texas, what the database provider will do is it will match up those two tickets under the one person's name and date of birth and address. So what you'd end up having is a name, date of birth, and you'd have two addresses, one in Arlington, Virginia, and one in Austin, Texas. To me, that's one of the best advantages to the fee-based services. One of the advantages to the free-based services are that people are changing their information all the time. So the information that you might be seeing is current. Where the fee-based may lag a little bit, the information on the web-based programs that are free is always changing. So if people are updating their information constantly, you can see where they had dinner last night. You can see if they were invited to an event on Evite and you need to serve a subpoena on them. That information is always changing, and that to me is the advantage of both services.
As we know, the financial climate in law enforcement is a constant struggle. Are there any pay resources that you would recommend as a must-have to law enforcement agencies?
TLO was started a number of years ago, and basically it's another data aggregator that has tons of information. I tell my class, in addition to using TLO, some agencies use CLEAR, which they can utilize for their searches. And there's also some LexisNexis companies out there, such as Acumen or IRB, that a lot of our law enforcement people use.
Nicole, we appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge with us. In closing, I'd like to get your final thoughts on using the internet to assist investigators in information and people searching.
I highly recommend for ongoing research in a certain subject or an individual that investigators set up a Google alert. It takes you all of 3 minutes to set up and verify. And once you set up a Google alert, you will be notified of new content, including news, web, blogs, any information that was posted within the last 24 hours, the last week, wherever you set up your alert. Basically, this alert will make you look like a rock star and that you're on top of every case that you have, basically doing the work for you. You need to keep in mind that you need to verify all the information and confirm it, but the alert is the first step for investigators. The second thing that I recommend is using a program like Snagit or even printing your web sources as a PDF, anything that will capture your data and always document your underlying source. You need to keep in mind that the web is always changing and people often take down websites. They may have it up today and it may be gone tomorrow. So when you view something, make sure you capture it, note where you captured it from. So if you had to present it as evidence in court, or you had to present it as evidence in a trial, present it as evidence in a negotiation, you'd be able to document when it was there, when you pulled the information, and what your purpose of doing it was for.
Great. Thank you again. And Nicole, is there some contact information that you'd like to give if people have any questions for you or the information that you can provide?
Absolutely. I can always be reached at nicole@infinityinvestigative.com, or my phone number is area code 703-528-5882.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you for taking the time to join us for this conversation. This project was supported by Cooperative Agreement number 2009-BEBX-K030 with the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance. Points of view or opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and moderators and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. From all of us here at Search, thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you will join us again for another edition of Search's High Tech Crime Podcast Series.